Good morning. Seeing that we have a quorum, I'll call the meeting to order. This morning we are hearing a few bills. The first will be House File 1012. Representative McNamara, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1012 to be approved and be passed to Ways and Means. 1012 is a little bill that I can let Mr. Meyer, it deals with the waterfall habitat improvement account, and it's actually also in our omnibus bill that is going to begin to be conference tomorrow. But it would be good to get this bill also moving along. It'll give us some more options as we move forward.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Senate File 1012 deals with an issue dealing with the migratory waterfall stamp, commonly known as a duck stamp, Minnesota duck stamp. And what it does, it's on line 1.10. It makes this a direct appropriation, says appropriated to the commissioner. Every year, we have to come in and adjust the appropriations that are made on this account, because we're just estimating it through the budgetary process, and this would just allow us direct access to those dollars. We cannot overspend the account, so there's no problems there. It helps us be able to manage the dollars that are there in a more effective manner for the purposes of the account.
Are there any other testimony?
Mr. Chair, there's not, and that's all there is to it. I would just ask for member support.
Is there anyone from the audience? Seeing none. Is there any discussion from the committee? Seeing none, would you like to?
Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 1012 be passed and moved to Ways and Means Committee.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion passes to move the bill to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, I'd like to move House File 1011. It's a similar bill, but it deals with the trout and salmon management account instead of the waterfall account, and I would like it to be moved to the general register, and I could stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. So there, you have no testimony?
No, it would be similar, Mr. Chair, to the testimony we just heard.
And is there anyone in the audience from the public that wishes to step forward and testify? Seeing none. Are there any questions from the members? Mr. McNamara, would you please?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move House File 1011 be passed and move to the general register.
All those in favor of moving and passing House File 1011 to the general register, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, signify by saying nay. Seeing none, House File 1011 passes and moves on to the general registry. The next bill is House File 1088. Would Representative Druskowski please step forward?
Representative Druskowski, you want to move your bill?
I will.
You've got another stop. This is the one we moved yesterday. It deals with the important flood issues that we noticed and some environmental provisions.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1088 be recommended to pass and transferred to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. And Representative Druskowski, you have just a few sections that deal with the environmental area, so I would ask members that we concentrate on those sections. Representative Druskowski, if you want to touch on them or your testifier, we could do that. Thank you.
Will do, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this is a largely an agency bill. It was brought, it addresses Chapter 12A, which is a chapter that directs the deployment of disaster relief dollars after the legislature authorizes a disaster relief bill. So we pass the bill, and then the agencies use Chapter 12A as the guidance for them to deploy the relief. And the agencies brought forward, directed or organized by the Department of Homeland Security Emergency Management. And with me is Mr. Setter from that department, willing to talk about those provisions, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Wade Setter. I'm the Deputy Director with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Department of Public Safety. This bill is largely captures a number of issues that were raised during the special session, the second special session in 2010, as we were responding to providing some aid to local units of government impacted by last fall's floods. And the original legislation was passed, I believe, in 2007. And what it's designed to do is to provide services through state programming to areas that are not eligible for federal disaster assistance. In the section that deals with Bowser 12A05, during the special session, legislators raised a concern over the Reinvest in Minnesota program not being an appropriate vehicle for disaster recovery since it is a mitigation strategy. The changes in this section make clear the use of disaster funds appropriated to the RIM program, so it's a clarification. In the education section, it's just more consistent with how they determine enrollment aid. DEED has a section that deals with emergency management grants and loan forgiveness. Housing finance is a technical change. Human services has a change dealing with waiving timelines of payments.
Mr. Setter, excuse me, if you could just, we're only going to concentrate on the environmental sections.
I understand, Mr. Chair.
Continue.
The natural resources section in 12A12 really removes a phrase substantially damaged, because that has a federal definition that's a legal definition under FEMA regulations, and by removing that, it allows more flexibility in the use of appropriations under 12A in dealing with specific issues that we are trying to address during disaster recovery.
Thank you. Questions for either the testifier, Mr. Setter, or for Representative Drazkowski? To 1088. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. You want to renew your motion?
I will, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1088 be recommended to pass and go to the Transportation Committee.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Representative Drazkowski, you're off to Transportation. Members, we're going to switch gears here. We're going to go to the energy issues. I believe Representative Beard has a couple different bills. One of them is going to serve as our omnibus transportation bill. And then Representative Hackbart's 1283, I anticipate. I'm not sure we'll get through both of Representative Beard's bills. And then we'll finish Representative Beard. We're not coming back until 6 o'clock tonight, I think is the plan. Depending on how far we get, we'll see how quick we can come back after session. Maybe we'll try and find out over the next hour and a half here how quick session will be tonight, and whether we think we need to break for dinner or not for dinner. If we're going to break for dinner, maybe we'll do, Representative Purcell has asked that maybe we have a community dinner down in the cafeteria to bond together a little bit, Representative Beard, as we try and get through the last few weeks here. So we'll maybe break bread down there, depending, or we'll get through the rest of committee first. Representative Beard, why don't you start? I think Representative Hackbart's going to chair when we get going, but he's busy right now. Representative Beard, do your bill.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman and members, good morning. I'd like to move House File 1440. I think this is the second or third engrossment, and recommend it pass be moved to the General Register. And Mr. Chairman, this bill has been here before for the energy portion, and then was referred to the Committee on Government Operations, where we delved into extensively the dealings with Minneapolis Park Board and different areas of government, and asked for it to be referred back here because there are some environmental considerations we'd like to talk about, particularly water flow rates and visual impact in the area of St. Anthony Falls. So in fairness to our friends at the Minneapolis Park Board, who wanted to be sure we had an opportunity to talk about those things, I requested the bill come back for the environmental portion of the discussion about House File 1440. Mr. Chairman, before I do, however, I do have one amendment, an author's amendment I'd like to offer. Members, if you're looking at the latest version of House File 1440, excuse me, and you go to line 1.20. The middle of the line where the words, if the hydroelectric facility uses property, etc., if you would strike everything after that to the end of line 2.2.
Representative Beard moves that on line 1.20, starting with the word if, ending at the end of line 2.2, be deleted from the bill to get the shape. Bill in the shape you'd like. All in favor of that amendment signify by saying yes.
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Beard, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Now we're going to, I know we want to talk a little bit about the waterfall rates. I think it was touched on in this committee when we first were here. I have not heard someone from Minneapolis Park Board may want to testify about that, but not seeing them coming forward at just a moment, let me just tell you briefly, the concern was that the water over the dam is an aesthetic that the park board is very interested in, and I think you'd find that the folks that are proposing the hydroelectric turbine at the Old Crown site are also very interested in. Negotiations are taking place, in fact, Mr. Chairman, because I think the work of this committee and this place and other folks of good nature and goodwill, the Park Board and the Crown Hydro folks have met and are meeting today and have another meeting scheduled for May 4th. Members, among the things they're talking about are the flow rates they're concerned about, so that for aesthetic purposes, water continues to come over the top of the dam. And I think you'll find that the folks at Crown Hydro are amenable to the proposals the Park Board is putting forward. I've heard everything in a range somewhere between 1,500 cubic feet per second to 2,000 cubic feet per second. Of course, this will affect the impact the economics of the generation, but the folks at Crown Hydro recognize their place in the pecking order on who has demands on the river, its flow, and so on and so forth, with Minneapolis and St. Paul being first for their water supply. And then the, I'm not sure if the Lock and Dam is number two or if the NSP power plant across the river is number two. Nonetheless, Crown Hydro falls to fourth on the list of who gets the water allocation, and they're prepared to move forward with the Park Board's discussions, recognizing that they're fourth and recognizing that there will be restrictions put on the flow. Mr. Chairman, I do have Mr. Tard Guerrero from representing Crown Hydro here if there are questions or comments, or if there's any other testifiers who want to talk about the environmental impacts of the river flow. I'm certainly happy to stand for that comment now.
Okay, very good, Representative Beard. Questions for Representative Beard or the testifier for Crown Hydro? Members, we have heard this bill extensively a week or so ago, and it had extensive hearing in government operations. I think we've heard quite a lot about this bill already. So we're going to only address the environmental impact issues of this bill. Any questions? Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from the Park Board this morning? Or
if they'd like to come up and testify, certainly, Representative Hilton. Anybody else in the audience like to come forward? Mr. Rice.
No. Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Rice, attorney for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. I was a few minutes late, so I assume that Representative Beard explained that the bill is changed now and applies to cities of the first class and with hydro facilities beyond Crown Hydro to deal with the constitutional issues. So you're now looking at this bill applying to XL Energy's St. Anthony Falls plant, the Brookfield Development Plant at the Lower Falls in St. Anthony, the Ford plant in St. Paul, and potentially the Southern Minnesota Power plant in the Verona River in Rochester. The Park Board is still working with Crown Hydro. There's been meetings. There'll be more meetings this week. The board will outline its position next Wednesday, May 4th, see if a resolution of this matter can be reached. We're committed to doing that. We will do that. We do think that this is a matter of local control. In the way this legislation is now framed, it's affecting not only Minneapolis but three other cities. And I understand that the author has amended out on page 1, line 20 and beyond, the ability of municipalities to impose reasonable fees for use by a facility. In essence, what this legislation does is give any hydroelectric facility in the city the first class. We've all played Monopoly. It's the card you land on chance. Go directly to GOAL, collect $200. So there's no municipal regulation, no local control, no oversight of these facilities, which is a pretty significant precedent. And again, we think we would point out why having local control of these issues at some level is very important. So with that, I'd stand for questions.
Questions?
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rice, I, of course, agree with you on local control, and it is fascinating to watch representatives wanting to take property rights that used to be sacred and now are anything but sacred. But I go back to the contract that was signed between you, not you, but in fact it was an old contract. I don't know that you were even around at the time, between the Park Board and Crown Hydro, in which they agreed not to do anything without the Park Board's permission. So I am, my curiosity is this a deep pocket that you can sue for breach of contract, or are they in this financial, much of a financial mess as we are reading about, and that they are not a deep pocket, so they're just taking a big leap risk and coming over to the legislature and trying for that big risk because they don't have any money? Or is that a question you could even answer?
Mr. Rice and Representative Wagenius, we've been over some of these issues already. We were bringing this back bill back here to discuss the environmental issues to the bill, but Representative Rice, or Mr. Rice, would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, I was around in 98. I did draft that contract. That agreement with Crown Hydro is what got them their FERC license. Without that agreement, I do not believe that FERC would have permitted this project. So we would submit that their argument that they have the license in the first place is predicated on that agreement, and they obtained it under false conditions. As to the financial ability of the company, that's one of the things we're looking at. I don't know that it's worth commenting on that point, but...
Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if Mr. Rice is the person for this, but it's more a question for Representative Beard. You know, I know we're supposed to be talking about the environmental issues, but we just amended out the ability for the municipalities to collect fees, and you know, it may not be an environmental issue, but it seems like a pretty big deal in terms of changing the bill. And so I know it was what put in the form the author wanted it to be, but I'm just kind of curious about some of the reasoning for why we would amend, why that was amended out.
Representative Beard. Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for the question. The language is not prohibitive. It was language that was put in the first place that I thought was going to be permissive. However, there are three other hydroelectric companies in cities of the first class that quickly came and said, you've now called attention by putting into statute the ability of a city to do this. They could have done it anyhow, and even with this language being removed from the bill, as part of a contractual negotiating process, they still can ask for and receive fees as part of the give and take for siting and permission and so on and so forth. So no, this does not mean they can't. It just takes out of the statute books the fact that we highlighted that they can, and so rather than incentivizing or calling attention to, we're just removing it so that the other hydroelectric companies are already doing yeoman's work and doing a fine job, don't fall victim to the issue we're addressing here. I might point out too, Mr. Chairman, while I have the floor, that in every case of the other hydroelectric folks, it will be, as this one will turn out to be when it eventually gets finished, something that turns into a community asset that actually is a boon to the parks and a boon to the local electric grid, and at the end of the day, this will work out well. But thank you for the question.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Wright.
If I could address that question, with all due respect to the author, I don't read the legislation any longer as giving local governments any ability to permit, license, grant easements or authorizations. The way I read the legislation is that if you are a hydro facility under 100 megawatts, you're located in the city of the first class and you have a FERC license, you don't need anything. You just simply, local governments have to let you come in and do whatever they want.
Well, Mr. Rice doesn't prohibit that from happening either, going into negotiation. Further discussions? Representative Hilke.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I presume we're about ready to vote on this bill. as members are probably aware, when this bill was introduced, I was second author on the bill. It's an issue that I've been familiar with as a past chair of the Energy Committee for some time now, and I felt that it was that it was time that this issue be brought to some resolution. And I congratulate Representative Beard on apparently having caused the communications and negotiations between the proposers and the park board that are now taking place, which was what I had hoped would occur as a result of this bill being introduced. Because that is as much as I hoped would occur as a result of this bill's being introduced, and that that is happening, I will not be supporting advancing this bill this morning. I feel that its intent at this point has been accomplished, and it has implications for other projects and precedents that I would not support. And so, Representative Beard, I think actually your bill has accomplished its purpose, and I think at this point we should allow the negotiations that are taking place between the Park Board, City of Minneapolis, and the proposers of this project to go forward, and whatever the outcome, I don't think at this point that it's the business of the legislature to be dictating that outcome.
Further discussion? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Hi, Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. I wanted to raise some specific objections only because we are on the Environmental Committee and we felt it was important to point this out. In line 1.19, municipal land use rules, regulation, ordinances, authorizing content do not apply to hydroelectric facilities in cities of the first class. This is particularly problematic from an environmental standpoint. While many of the water issues are enforced by federal and state rules and regulations, it's the local governments through their ordinances, rules, and procedures. The guarantee issues of stormwater and other things are met. We are the ones that inspect these facilities and make sure the plans are done. We make sure that there are proper egress for emergency vehicles, and so that the relationship with the adjoining properties is proper and within the rules of the local jurisdiction. So we're clearly concerned that, in fact, our abilities to enforce environmental rules is hindered by the fact that we cannot enforce both our regulations and ordinances under this bill. And that would apply to all facilities in cities of the first class, those that are existing, because as rules change, sometimes their relationship and land use changes as well. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm confused. I thought that navigable waters were federal, and that because of the permitting comes from federal, that you know, the states do have some restriction on them, and localities in restricting activity on federal waters. So I guess I'm, I don't see as to where this is a argument on that point.
Okay. Ms. Johnson, please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And, Mr. Chair, I think I can respond to that question. The issue here isn't about regulating the waters themselves. That is the federal navigable waters, you're correct. The issue here is what happens on the land next to those waters. That is state and local government responsibility. It includes some federal requirements, but the state and in Minnesota, we delegate that almost entirely down to the local governments are responsible for doing that. And, Mr. Chair, I would just add that this bill completely removes that authority for any regulation, ordinance, authorization, consent, anything of environmental or any other local government regulation. We have zero regulatory authority on any property affiliated with a dam in a city of the first class, not just for environmental regs, but for any other local ordinance that we might choose to have for public safety, public health, public welfare. Are all exempted on that property in this bill right now. And I know, Mr. Chair, that that is not the intent of the author. We can work on that as we move forward. I would add that I do agree with what Mr. Rice said earlier, the removal of the fee language here. While it does not prohibit a future payment to a local government for hosting a dam facility, it actually, I'm having trouble imagining how that would occur because they no longer need to talk to the local government. They need no approval, no consent, no permission, and have to follow no local regulation. So it would just be a gift, I guess, if they decided to walk in and say, by the way, we don't need your approval, but here's some money. Hope it helps, which would be very nice. But we have no leverage any longer. There's no reason they need to even talk to a local government under this. And it does affect four cities, three of which currently have dams. Rochester has a dam. City of St. Paul hosts a dam with Minneapolis, and Minneapolis has two. So we have a pretty significant future impact because this does not have a sunset. This permanently exempts not just what would happen at Crown Hydro, but what would happen at those existing facilities as well. They are now exempt from any future regulation as well. So the League of Minnesota Cities, Mr. Chair, respectfully has very significant concerns with this bill moving forward and what it could imply.
Representative Mugenia.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Roll call is requested. Anyone else in the audience would like to speak to the bill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1440 be referred to the general pass as pass as amended to the general register. And roll call being requested. Clerk will take the roll.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
Aye.
Dill?
Pass.
Druskowski?
Aye.
Fabian?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell? Quam?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No. There being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is passed and referred to the general register. Representative Beard, on to your next bill, House File 1025.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1025. It'll be known as the Energy Policy Omnibus Bill. Recommended pass be referred to the General Register. And Mr. Chairman, I believe there are amendments. The first amendment I'd like to offer is the DE3 amendment.
Okay, Representative Beard moves the DE3 amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like. It's a delete all amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Bill is adopted. Our amendment is adopted. Representative Beard, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman and members, over the past couple of weeks, we've heard several energy-related bills dealing with policy. All the provisions in here, save for one, have no money attached to them. They're basically policy issues that we've discussed and in many cases amended. And since the bills have been heard and laid over here, there have been further amendments offered and incorporated in the DE3 amendment that you'll we're going to discuss here for the next few moments. I think, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to discuss for just a moment the there's a few bills that are not in here that we talked about. Of course, the coal moratorium removal, House File 72, the nuclear ban repealed, House File 9, and the Crown Hydro project that we just talked about are traveling on their own. There are a few others, I think, that the one we heard last night, Mr. Eliff, if I may ask, regarding the retail selling power net metering back at retail rates, was that one incorporated in this or not, Mr. Chair, if I can ask staff?
Mr. Eliff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, that's House File 1513, Representative Perkelson's
yes.
bill. That is in here.
That is. Thank you for making that catch. I appreciate that.
Representative Beard.
Otherwise, Mr. Chairman, I've done my best to make this as non-controversial as possible. I do understand, however, that in this place there are differences in philosophies and in values and what we believe government should do and probably shouldn't do, and the faith, I think, in the marketplace versus the regulatory regime, and so on and so forth. And I think those are honest differences held by people of goodwill and good intention. So I don't think we can accommodate everything, but we did our best, I think, and I commend the folks at the Commerce Department, speaking on behalf of the administration, the folks from the regulated utilities and industries, the folks from large industry who are largely hugely impacted by the things we've done here over the past several years, and the folks from the municipals, the cooperatives, and other interested parties who have given of their time, their talents, and their good thoughts to create the bill you have before you, House File 1025, as amended with the DE3 amendment. I could go through each one of these, Mr. Chairman, but I believe we're pretty familiar with them. So if we could, I believe there are some amendments that we would probably want to discuss at the moment, although I have to tell you, Mr. Chairman, in my packet, the only one I have is called an A3 amendment, and I see no other ones at the moment.
Representative Beard, is that your amendment, the A3 amendment?
It's
not. Oh. Representative Scott, to
I guess I could have done it from my chair.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm glad to have her up here.
Representative Scott, to the A3 amendment. Representative Scott moves the A3 amendment. Discussion.
Mr. Chair and representatives, what this amendment does is makes a change in wording to make it clear that municipal power agencies and generation and transmission cooperatives are required to estimate their costs in complying with renewable energy standards as it affects their sales to their distribution utility members. And unlike other utilities under the standard, these utilities do not have retail customers themselves, and it would not be my intention to have them investigate the locally set retail rates of their distribution utility members. And secondly, the amendment also removes the term analysis, so that in the initial report to the legislature, the utilities are not asked to divulge proprietary information. So that is the third change in the bill, making these future filings explicitly part of the integrated resource plan filing process, also serves the same point and makes all the rules of the process apply to the impact information filing that apply to the IRP process generally.
Representative Beard, to the amendment, comments?
Mr. Chair and members, I think this is an amendment that makes a good bill a little bit better, so I'd be happy to have you pass the amendment.
Questions for members on the amendment? All in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. I believe there's another amendment, an A4 amendment. Who's going to claim that?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that A4 amendment.
Representative Hilty moves the A4 amendment. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe this is a department initiative that I agreed to offer as a courtesy to the department and the author. I believe the author is in agreement with the intent of the amendment.
Representative Beard, the A4 amendment, have you seen this?
I Representative Hilty, is this the one we discussed just a moment ago?
It is.
Mr. Chairman, this was an oversight, drafting oversight, that I think it makes a good bill even better. So I would encourage members to adopt the A4.
Further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. A4 amendment is adopted. Any further discussion to the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, I was listening closely on the DE3 and, you know, the question about the bill we heard last night. And I'm just looking at the time on the DE3. Looks like it was drafted at 5:50 p.m. And then we heard a bill afterwards that was incorporated in this. And I know we heard a lot of bills, and I seem to remember at the some of the earlier committees there was a commitment to maybe look at some of the bills and not and evaluate them, whether they get included. But it appears that everything's been included here, even the bill that was heard after this DE was drafted. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, yes, that would be correct. And I apologize if that looks unseemly. I did see the bill. I thought the bill was a good idea. And had the bill not prevailed in committee last night, I certainly would have seen an amendment to take it out of the bill today. But in an order to get as much of the bill in front of you as we could in a timely fashion as possible, and again, I apologize that 5:50 p.m. last night was as good as we could do, I did take the liberty of including the bill with the intention that if the committee had rejected the bill, we would delete it out today. So, yes, that's accurate.
Further discussion? Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish Chair McNamara were here because when this bill was initiated, the chair asked me to work with Representative Beard and with the department to put together a non-controversial bill that would include the elements in which we could agree and which were likely to pass through the process and get signed into law. And I attempted to follow the chair's instructions. I did work with Representative Beard and the department to put this bill together. We had communication about language in some of the bills that are incorporated in this that I suggested could be changed. The bill does not reflect any of those changes. There were at least a couple of bills that I suggested were ones that there would be no agreement on. One of which, in fact, I thought we had agreed was going to move separately, that turns out to be in the bill. As Representative Hansen pointed out, one of the bills that's incorporated in this omnibus bill was just heard for the first time last evening after it had already been incorporated into the delete all amendment. And Representative Beard just represented that had it not been regarded favorably last evening, he would be entertaining a motion to delete it. But in fact, there was no vote on this bill last evening. It was simply laid over. I believe the expression at the time was for possible inclusion in the bill, which is somewhat ironic considering that it had already been included in the bill. So, Mr. Chair, I think that the author has chosen a different path than one of compromise and agreement on what would be generally acceptable or not. I don't intend to offer any amendments to this bill. I don't intend to support it in its current form, and I would not recommend to others that they support it either. I regret that we were not able to come to any kind of an agreement on this. I thought that that was the intention of the chair to begin with, and I thought that that was the intention of Representative Beard as well, but I don't see any point in attempting to do anything with this bill except let it take its inevitable course. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks, and I would ask for a roll call on the bill.
Okay, roll call requested. Representative Beard, do you have a comment?
Yes, and comments, concluding comments, or continue to stand for questions, whatever you wish. Mr. Chairman, I think that, first of all, I want to express my appreciation to Mr. Grant and to Representative Hilty for working with me on this bill. We did meet several times, Mr. Grant and I, at least on two occasions, Representative Hilty once in my office and other glancing blows on the floor in places, and I appreciate the work in a very busy time, including a seven-day break in the middle when we were busy with other things in our lives besides this. My estimation of the bill is that it's probably 95% in agreement, non-controversial. As I stated in my opening remarks, there are a few things where we have philosophical differences, and I think that we just need to put those to a vote and have a discussion with the other body and with the governor over what prevails and what doesn't. The fact that the assertion was there were no changes, Mr. Chairman and members, I seem to remember quite a bit of yielding from the original bills that were presented, some of which the OES director weighed in on, some which Representative Hilty and others weighed in on. A couple of them come to mind. In House File 1189, some of the folks who are getting hammered by our unintended consequences of our conservation program asked that any facility with a load greater than 10 megawatts be able to be exempted. OES and the administration said that was unacceptable. They wanted it to be bigger, and so the amendment was made to take it back to 20 megawatts. There was interest in aggregating some of the facilities that have a grain dryer, for instance, on one side of the highway and an ethanol plant on another side of the highway, wanted to be able to aggregate their load since it's the same business. That did not meet approval of OES or the administration, and so that language was jettisoned. There was business about the whole administratively onerous process of applying for exemptions and proprietary information that was asked for. In asking for exemptions, I'm thinking particularly of the big refineries south of the cities. The reason they pay up to $6 million a year for CIP without an exemption had to do with trade secrets, proprietary information, and things that the administration, the previous administration, was not entitled to, and so they took a principled stand. They're asking for regulatory relief. OES and this administration said, well, if you'll amend the bill in this fashion, and that fashion, we will consider that a step in the right direction. Those changes were made and indeed are incorporated in the DE3 amendment, and so on and so forth. There are a couple of cases where, however, oh, and I could talk about the Excelsior language, where it was amended down to a shadow of its former bill when I presented it. Mr. Chairman and members, there were at least three major amendments made to that bill to accommodate concerns that OES said they had. As of this moment, we have not yet heard back from OES whether the changes that they asked for now put that section of the bill in the form at which it could be signed by the governor. However, there are some things that we just have differences over. The change of one word, the to a. The to a. And I mean A, not UH. I offered the amendment sort of, and that didn't work with the reviser. The sort of apparently isn't a legal term we can work with. It has to be definitive. So whenever we direct the PUC, and I remind you members, we are the policymakers. We tell the PUC what to do, not the other way around. When we tell the PUC that they're going to consider cost-based rates, and they have to be the primary consideration whenever they're doing rate setting and rate allocation in a rate case, the difference between the word the primary consideration and a consideration is a huge difference. And it is a real difference. We disagree on that. I could not in good conscience unrepresent the folks who brought me the bill with whom I agree. And so I have to leave that one in there. And I know that is going to be a point of contention. We could have had an amendment this morning to take it out. and we would have had that discussion. I hope I would have prevailed, but nonetheless, I wish it would remain in the bill, and without any amendment, it is in the bill still. And I think there were a couple other issues, Representative, like that we just had honest disagreements on, and so we could not amend those. But I want to just be clear that there was a great deal of movement by all parties concerned on this bill, and I think we've got the best possible bill we can make at this point in time. So, members, I would ask for your support to move this to the general register as it moves along its way in the process.
Representative Knuth.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to request an oral amendment. That would be on page 22. Lines 22.19 and 22.20. And I would like to add back in the words on line 22.19, technical, the very first word of that line. And then at the end of that sentence where and provide technical is stricken, I would like to restore that. And then on 22.20, advice to the commission also reinsert that. And the reasoning is, folks, I believe on this commission that we're forming that we need to have more people with more technical expertise on that in that department to advise the commissioner. So that was my reasoning for adding that back in. I would request member support.
Representative Beard.
But Mr. Chairman, I think this could be a very workable amendment, and it gives rise to a comment I was going to make. When I said there was no money in the policy bill, actually, members, this is the section where there is. This is the administration's initiative to reestablish the Energy Reliability Office and rename it the Intervention Office, and it does give the commission the authority to levy up to $1 million against the utilities to pay for it. Mr. Chairman, that's the only place in the bill where there is any financial ramifications. To the amendment that's been offered, I would support the amendment.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that the section that's being amended is House File 1545, which is another bill that was not heard in committee. And I understand that it's a department initiative. It was a bill that was authored by Chairman McNamara. I think I would be interested in hearing the department's position on the amendment before we vote on it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, while the department is coming, would you correct my memory if it's wrong, but didn't we hear this bill?
We did.
Tuesday or yesterday? Tuesday, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Commissioner? Mm-hmm. Please state your name and we represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Grant, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. The section of the omnibus bill that we're talking about, I believe, was heard in committee, and the chair is right, or the author is right, this bill is about reliability administrator and merging that function with another function that was in state law. It doesn't, however, add any new money, and just to clarify that, this is existing assessment authority under a special revenue account within the department. It simply extends the sunset on our ability to continue making that assessment and providing these services to the state of Minnesota. And to the amendment, Mr. Chair, we have no problems with the amendment.
Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Scott renews her motion for amendment. Any discussion? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Any further discussion of the bill? Representative Beard, I'm told that the bill has to make a stop at Ways and Means.
Okay.
Okay. So, Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1025 as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion, signify.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
Aye.
Dill?
Aye.
Druskowski?
Aye.
Fabian?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell? Quam?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No.
There being 11 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with recommendation to pass. Thank you, Representative Beard.
Members, we're going along pretty good. I think we're probably on track to not actually have to come back tonight. We'll have to save the breaking bread together for another day. We'll get an opportunity for that in the future. Next, we have House File 1283, and Representative Hackbarth, to your House File 1283.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is an all-terrain vehicle bill, a motorcycle bill, a watercraft bill, a number of issues with off-road recreational vehicles. And Mr. Chairman, to get the bill in the shape that I'd like to move the A11-0367 amendment, to delete all amendment to get it in the shape I'd like.
Members, Representative Hackbarth would like to move the A11-0367 amendment. Get the bill in the shape you'd like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Hackbarth, if you could, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to start with the last amendment that I have. This was inadvertently left out of the amendment when I put it together. This is an issue that Polaris came to me with. They have a facility up in Roseau where they store some fuel, and they need this exemption in the law. There's a number of exemptions to the oxygenated fuel statutes, and they're finding that they're running into some trouble up there, and they need this amendment to comply with the law. So I've talked to the chairs of the Ag Committee in the House, the chair of the Ag Committee in the Senate, and I've talked to a number of people about this. I have not heard any opposition whatsoever. I would move the 0375 amendment.
Okay. Just one point to the amendment. When you've been talking to the Polaris people, have you asked them to consider keeping more of the people in Wisconsin and less in Mexico, Representative Hackbarth? They're just Mr. smiling in the audience.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I've talked to him about that.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just thinking of all of us that own Polaris ATVs. We like to see more jobs in the region. I see them nodding yes in the audience, so maybe they're giving consideration. Representative Hackbarth, so thank you for your work on that. To the A11-0375 discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendments adopted. Representative Hackbarth, back to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Dill had a question.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. On the 367, although I voted aye, I just want to make sure that subdivision 10 on 328 fixes the problem that actually I created, or Senator Chaudhry and I created, over the Class 2 ATV, and that's the language. The members, what happened is they, when we changed those weights to accommodate the electric vehicles, we inadvertently had one of the Class 2 vehicles that weighed just under the amount and became a Class 1 inadvertently. And so this is the language that you picked up to fix it.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dale, for that clarification. Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through the bill if I can. The very first section has to do with seasons. This issue's been taken care of. We don't need this language anymore in statute. We've got it all clarified. It's an issue that really kind of centers around deer hunting. This takes care of that. The next issue is dual registration for off-highway motorcycles. And we have folks in the audience that would testify to this and clarify this. It's about registering an off-road motorcycle and also being able to register it as a on-road motorcycle and have a dual registration. I briefly talked to Representative Beard about this issue, and I believe he wants the bill to come to his committee to just get its blessing, I believe, unless we hear different today. Let's see. Section 3 is a non-resident off-road vehicle trail pass for four-wheel drive trucks. Four-wheel drive trucks that come to Minnesota, maybe from Wisconsin or Iowa, from wherever, if they're going to come here and use our trails, we have a separate new trail pass for them. And that takes us through Section 4 that creates this new definition for ATVs, and Representative Dill talked to that briefly. Down through Section 7 now. Section 7 is an issue about passengers, and it's a training issue where we want to be able to maybe have two people on one vehicle for training purposes for youth. So they get a little bit more used to riding these things, and we can give them more hands-on, better training. Section 8 is a bill that Representative Biskins had that has to do with personal watercraft. These new personal watercraft that are being built now, some of these things are really big and carry multiple passengers, like four passengers at one time. And this simply states that if one of these personal watercraft is equipped with lights from the factory, etc., that they're actually going to be licensed as a boat as opposed to a watercraft. And Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment that's going to clarify this. If I could move an oral amendment on 4.15 to delete the word proper and install the words manufacture installed. So that would read, unless the personal watercraft is equipped with manufacturer installed navigational lights as prescribed by the commissioner. I talked to the DNR, and they feel much better about having that kind of language in here. So I would move that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
To Representative Hackbart's amendment. Discussion. Representative Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How would this then affect ones that had already been sold?
Representative Deal, can you restate your into the mic? I wasn't able to hear.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hackbart, how would this affect the units that had already been sold with regard to manufacturers installed? Because it would be possible to put aftermarket lights that met the criteria of lighting for a watercraft on them, on ones that are already in existence and being in use today. How would that work?
Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dill. It is not the intention of this legislation to have aftermarket lights installed on a personal watercraft and make it a boat. And that's why we're putting in the manufacturer installed lights. And there's both these watercraft that are already sold that do have manufacturer installed lights, navigational lights. I think we're going to have to change the registration of those. But it doesn't create where we're going to be able to install navigational lights and make them a boat. That is not going to happen by this legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Wagini.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know whether this is the proper time for this question or not. If it's not the proper time, I can do it later. But Representative Hackbarth, if my memory serves lines 4.14, that language was put in there because of huge complaints by lake owners, property owners, of the noise on lakes at night. And just a little intuitive sense is that lights don't stop the noise, and that something that is bigger and carries four people might even be more noisy than something that carries one person. So is this something that you have let the Lake Owners Association know about? Are they here to testify on this particular amendment?
Representative Hackbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, this is the perfect time to discuss this issue. Since, with modern technology that's been developed, since the time of this legislation when this was passed, these new watercraft have been developed where they're more than just one person riding these, or more than just two people riding them. The new personal watercraft where this would pertain to are these bigger watercraft that three or four people can ride on, and they are equipped right from the factory with navigational lights. And since the time of this original legislation that passed, these personal watercraft have become much, much quieter. They're quieter than most boats. They're four-stroke engines. They're not two-stroke engines. They're very, very quiet. They're quieter than my boat that I'm able to drive at night. They're very, very quiet.
Representative Wagenius.
I take your word for it. I'm not a cabin owner. I don't have a personal oar in this water. The Lakeshore Owners Association has been notified of this amendment, because you wouldn't necessarily just pick it up in a bill like this?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Wagenius, this was part of a bill that Representative Biskins had put in quite some time ago. I don't know if Lakeshore, I haven't heard anything from any Lakeshore owners at all. Representative Biskins hasn't heard anything. It's been around a while.
Thank you.
Representative Deal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to actually concur with Representative Hackbarth. These boats, essentially, that we're talking about are used in a totally different way and fashion than a personal watercraft that was developed and used when this original legislation was passed. I mean, you know, I live on a lake. It's a resort community. And it frankly drove us to distraction, even though I owned one, more than one, personal watercraft, when after dark they're out spinning donuts, as it's called, out in front of people's cabins and making all kinds of rackets, and like a boat that didn't have a driver going round and round and round. These type of vehicles that hold multiple people, as Representative Hackbarth, are four. On our lakes, we have runs where you can make 60 miles nonstop without touching land. And they're used for transportation. And they are not used in the same fashion as those original watercraft were. And so, you know, I support this length. As well, these watercraft are used at night to travel sometimes great distances, and they certainly need to have light.
Thank you. Additional discussion. Representative Hackbart, back to your bill.
Did we pass the amendment for the manufactured installed? We have to vote on my amendment.
I'm sorry, Representative Hackbart, I don't think we have. To the amendment, isn't that the 375?
No. I have, sorry, an oral amendment that on line 4.15 deleted the word proper, and we install the words manufactured installed.
Ms. Taylor, can you repeat it? I'm sorry. Representative Hackbart, will you repeat it?
On line 4.15, between the words with and navigational, scratch the word proper and install the words manufacturer installed.
Does everyone have the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendments adopted. The oral amendments adopted. Thank you, Representative Hepburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On to Section 9. Section 9 and, let's see, through... I believe it's up to Section 15 is a Representative Nelson bill that has to do with titles, and we're just trying to conform to everyone else. Some of these titles go directly to the bank if you get a loan on them. We've changed a lot of that legislation, and these titles go directly to the owner now, and we're going to change that. And I know that I've talked to the DNR, and the DNR is in agreement with doing that. They think that's a good idea. Let's see, Section 15, let's see, I don't know if, maybe Mr. Bone could come up and discuss Section 15.
Mr. Bone, if you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jonathan Bone. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota and the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association. Section 15 will reduce the burden on local governments, excuse me, to have to, it's part of a, Section 15, 16, and 17 are all together. Section 15 deletes on line 8.14 the word four-wheel and 8.16. Not all current ATVs have just four wheels. Also, on 8.17 to 8.19, it deletes a previous definition of ATV and replaces it with the statutory citation. Section 16 reduces the burden on local governments. Instead of having to renew their ordinances every year, they now will only have to do it every 3 years. And then you can also see four-wheel is deleted on 8.31. Section 17 changes the times of operation for those local ordinances so that... as you can see on 9.2 and 9.3, ATVs equipped with original equipment such as headlights, taillights, and brake lights are allowed to operate at nighttime or in the dark. Yeah. Then the rest of the bill, Section 18, 19, 20, and 21, are all where four-wheel was included in the statute and is now being deleted.
Thank you. Questions to the section of the bill? Continue, Representative Hackmer.
That's the extent of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Discussion to the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hackbarth, just we had in an earlier committee meeting a discussion about the track vehicles, and just looking throughout the bill, you're striking the four-wheel, and just wondering how that applies, if we're going to see the growth of the track vehicles, if... And I'm particularly wondering, and maybe this is what Representative Beard will look at in the Transportation Committee, but Section 18 and the crossing of intersecting highways. And I'm not that familiar with the track vehicles, but I think we had testimony earlier about them being slower. And maybe this is something to look at here on crossing roads and safety related to that. But maybe just if you could, on that particular case on crossing roads, but also... overall, on if we make these changes, what do you see with track vehicles or six or eight wheel vehicles as we're moving from four wheel as a definition of all-terrain vehicle?
Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And no, we're not addressing the new track system whatsoever. Though there's no manufacturer that builds an ATV or a machine like that with those tracks on it. Those tracks are an option that you can buy and add to your machine. I think that, at least in my estimation, we should be dealing with things that and regulating things that, you know, people are manufacturing these vehicles with wheels now. They're not manufacturing them with tracks. I know that they're becoming more popular, but these things are not legal to be on the ATV trails. They're not considered ATVs. The definition of an ATV has to have the tires. So that's where we're at right now. If we have to, if this does become more popular and it becomes an issue, I think we are going to maybe have to address that in the future. I even hear I hear rumor that there are some manufacturers that are going to start doing that. And if that does happen, then I think we will have to address that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That Representative Hackbarth, that helps clarify. I'm just seeing as we strike four wheels, so elsewhere in statute, the all-terrain vehicle still prohibits those, and that's clear.
Must have players.
Mr. Bowen.
Representative Hansen, if you see in line 3.18, the new definition of all-terrain vehicle includes equipped with 3-6 non-highway tires. So that would exclude any.
Thank you. Additional testimony. Additional. Representative Wagenius.
Can we hear from DNR?
Yeah, Mr. Meyer, Representative Wagenius would like to hear your comments on the bill. Or do you have a specific question, Representative Wagenius?
No,
to the bill, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I did receive a copy of this delete all amendment last night from Representative Hackbarth. The one question that we do have is with Section 8 still. We appreciate the changes that were made. It doesn't have these watercraft registered as boats. I don't know if that was the intent, but we're working on that. I have staff, our enforcement staff, and our other watercraft safety folks are looking at this language. I don't know if any of these are manufacturerly installed lights right now. I looked at a couple models last night. I just want to go on record that we may need to continue working on this section, make sure that it does work, as we all or many of you remember the contentiousness of this issue when it first came out. And we certainly don't want to go backwards, but move forwards with the recreational vehicle industry and use in the state. Oftentimes we're chasing technology. I think we deal with the definitions piece somewhat. We're getting our arms around that a little bit here, but this is another piece where these things are becoming more like boats than the traditional jet skis were. We want to try to make it work, but I want to just go on record that we may need to come back and change the language or deal with this as this bill progresses.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm really absolutely willing to work with the DNR to make that work.
Well, and to this point, Mr. Meyer, and I see at least Polaris is here in the audience. On the boats, we have to have the white light has to be so far above the highest thing. And I'm trying to envision with some of these personal watercraft, they're designed to be able to be flipped over and stuff. I can't imagine how that all works. So to that point, Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if you look at the language, it does. We do leave in the language as prescribed by the commissioner. So whatever the commissioner says, I believe there are regulations for boats on what those lights have to be. So that's why we let that know in the language, as prescribed by the commissioner.
Well, and thank you, Representative Hackbarth. I just want to be real careful here and do appreciate you working with Mr. Meyer and as we go down this road. I agree that they're nowhere near as loud as they used to be, and people are much more respectful today, but a lot of it is because of legislation that we passed. So I appreciate the willingness and the flexibility, but we do not want to have them spinning donuts in the middle of the lake in the dark and such like that, causing danger. So I appreciate your willingness to work on it. Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to speak about Representative Hansen's comments, but before you do, you created this mental image of these personal watercraft with four seats in them. And if I was riding in someone one of those with the white light on it and they rolled it over, that'd be the last time I'd ride with them. I think you're thinking of the single pony deals instead of the newer ones. Anyhow, to the point, Mr. Chairman, we want to see this in transportation, Representative Hansen, but primarily for the registration issues. There's an ability to create a security entry, a security interest, and a title and licensing, dual licensing, and so on. I know two of the agencies under our jurisdiction are DPS, Public Safety, and Vehicle Services, and I know they're going to want to comment on that part. So we'll certainly be paying attention to crossing the roads, but that's primarily the interest for transportation. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Representative Hackbarth. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just 2 points. First of all, there are some ATVs that I've seen, I've not been in them, that have 8 tires on them. And the definition here doesn't include those.
Mr.
Is that an oversight? Is that...
Representative Hackbarth.
Okay, I am getting clarification that if they have 8 tires, they're probably too heavy to be on the trails, so they're not going to be classified as an ATV to go on those trails. If you wanted to register them, they'd probably have to be registered as an off-road truck, for example.
Yep. Representative Fabian.
And then the other thing is, I don't see Mr. Meyer here, but if I convert my ATV to a track vehicle, how is that licensed?
Representative Hackbar.
Mr. Chairman, you can't register it as an ATV. You can't register it as a you could register it as an ATV, but you can't do the same things you can with a vehicle that has tires on it. You could you can't take it on a snowmobile trail. It's illegal for that. You could use it around the farm. You could use it, you know, in your business. If you had some kind of a business, you could maybe register as an off-road truck and go on off-road trails. I don't know that, but no, they are not legal to go on ATV trails.
Yeah, I think we need. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to be a little more proactive in coming days, weeks, months, certainly before the next session, anyway, and create some sort of a mechanism for allowing these people more access to more areas, because they really are not nearly as, you know, when people talk about renegade riders and stuff like that, the track vehicles don't do anywhere near the things that a wheeled ATV can do. But that's for another time. Thank you.
Representative Hackbart, to that point.
Representative comments earlier about track vehicles.
Well, and to your point, Representative Fabian and Representative Hackbart, I do believe this is the kind of thing next year there'll be a lot of time in our committee, and this is a policy discussion. I see Polaris in the audience, and if I'm not mistaken, they're close to potentially putting tracks on these vehicles right from the factory. I don't think they do it yet, but they may be, and we're going to have to probably have discussions about how that all fits and what the PSI and all those kind of things involved in ground speed and such. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair McNamara. Well, one of the most popular uses of these units is ice fishing on lakes, because a lot of times an ATV can't go, and someone wants an ATV and a track vehicle, so they can go back and forth between wheels and tracks, because they buy that aftermarket, the tracks, and they use them to access, you know, I didn't hear, all the discussion has been focused on trails, but they are extensively used on lakes for ice fishing, because they can travel on the lake, and so I just wanted to make that point, and I think that we do have some considerations, as the Chair said, to deal with in the coming months and years.
That's a good point. Additional discussion to 1283. Representative Hackbart.
Mr. Chairman, it was just brought to my attention that there is more redundant language here on this season issue. So on line 1.6, after forest lands, where the 1 is in parentheses, all the way through 1.7, the 2, including the 2 in parentheses, I would move to delete that. That's just more redundant language that we do not need. So I would move to delete that from statute.
Representative Hackbart has moved his oral amendment. Ms. Taylor, you have it.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would read on line 1.6, delete everything after lands, and then on 1.7, delete outside of the seasons prescribed under this paragraph. Semicolon or parentheses 2.
Discussion. All those in favor of the Hackbart oral amendment say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay. Amendments adopted. Representative Hackbart, I see no more discussion to your bill. Would you like to renew your motion?
I renew my motion, Mr. Chairman, to recommend House File 1283 be recommended pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment to our bill is passed and referred to transportation.
We don't have to come back?
Members, I guess Representative Hackbart does a good job of moving things ahead here. So we are on track to actually get out of here earlier this morning. We will be back. We are done until...
Well, unless something
we will be meeting Tuesday morning at our regular time, and we will have some bills that passed here. We will post by Monday, but I believe there's some bills that have passed here that will probably be compiled there on the general register or in ways and means, but they've passed all their policy bills, and they will be put together in a bill. We will honor all the timelines necessary for that, but they will be put together. So if folks have any thoughts on that, let's keep in touch. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before the break, I'd asked about whether we'd be hearing any bills that reference bonding that were environmental, for example, the RIM bill, and just checking back on that, if you have an intent of hearing any bonding bills that are environmental. I think there's some other ones as well that haven't received any hearings, even though there have been hearing requests put in.
And members, a number of you may have bonding bills, including myself, and when we get direction from leadership that they want to us to hear bonding bills, we will hear them. As members know, this is not a bonding year. Next year is the bonding bill year, and we certainly will be hearing bonding bills next year. But if we get the word from leadership that there will be a need for bonding bill hearings, I have told a number of representatives that have bonding bills in our committee that I've got one specifically that Representative Hansen and I and a number of you, Representative Wagenius, Representative Torkelson, Representative Anderson, I don't know who else is on. It's a RIM bill. It replaces some of the money that unfortunately was vetoed last year. So I can rest assured if we're going to hear a bonding bill, I've got strong feelings that that conservation easement bonding bill should be heard, and I'm not going to be unfair and hear mine and not other folks. As Representative Clark has been diligent, she has a bonding bill that deals with South Minneapolis and a swimming pool. I have promised her that if my bill gets a hearing, her bill will get a hearing. So if you hear we're going to hear environment bonding bills, I don't intend to be hit or miss in that. And I'm going to advocate strongly if there is any bonding bill that it include that that RIM. Representative Hansen, I know you put in a bill earlier and you're generous enough to co-author the bill that I have, so I appreciate that. Additional discussion? Members, we're adjourned until Tuesday morning. Remember, the conference committee will convene at 8:30 tomorrow morning, and I got confirmation that both Commissioner Landwehr and Commissioner Austin will be able to be at part of the conference committee tomorrow. They've got other commitments speaking out of town, but they've accommodated our schedule. Meeting's adjourned.